Today, I want to open up by sharing a study done in the field of psychology. There's a famous psychology study on self-control that many people cite that was performed in the 60s and 70s. And in this particular study, there's a group of four-year-old children who were placed into a room by themselves with a marshmallow and a bell. You may have heard of this study, but if you haven't, I'll remind you about what they did. These children were told that they could eat that marshmallow if they wanted, just by ringing the bell and having the researcher re-enter the room. Or they could just pick it up and eat it. Of course, the researchers wanted to see what they would do. But if they waited for about 20 minutes for the researcher to return, they would get two marshmallows, and they were told this. So you can imagine that this study on self-control put these four-year-old children to the test. Now, this study is mostly cited in reference to the fact that the children who were able to wait the full 20 minutes until the researcher returned and received two marshmallows instead of one, those children were followed through their lives, and there were very interesting results that showed up in their lives. Those individuals had higher test scores. They also had fewer problems with addiction. They had healthier lifestyles. And generally speaking, they achieved a lot of the good things that society measures as successful. The study about self-control shows that self-control is apparently a very good indicator of success in life. And it makes common sense. If we have control of our savings, we are more likely to save up for those things that are more important for us, that are we are able to buy and help us, you know, achieve our bigger goals. If we have more self-control, we will do our homework instead of, you know, goofing off. It's not rocket science that leads to success. But what I found interesting about this study was that in this experiment, the children who were able to wait 20 minutes until the researcher returned, the tool that they used, the mechanism that they used to succeed in that power of exertion of self-control, was that they were able to control their attention. Rather than stare at the marshmallow, pick it up, squeeze it, smell it, maybe taste it, or otherwise give that object attention, those children who were successful fixed their attention on something else entirely. And many of those children did this. They looked away. They stared at the corner, stared at the lap, did not look at the marshmallow. That was one of the patterns that was discovered in this study. It's the control of attention that was the method of staying in control for a lot of those successful children. Now, that's the study. Interestingly, it turns out that self-control takes a great deal of literal effort and energy. You will not be surprised at this, I'm sure. You know that if it really takes effort to not eat that second cookie, to control the portion size of your ice cream, whatever it is. But other studies other than this have shown that self-control fades after it has been exercised over and over and over again. Fatigue sets in over time. And weakness sets in when we have to use our self-control over and over. When we encounter conflict when we encounter conflict of our interests, rather, and the need to suppress a natural tendency or desire that we may feel, it takes effort. We have to try to do that, to retain our self-control and to do what we know is better. And the more frequently we encounter that conflict and that need to suppress, the harder it is to maintain our self-control. And eventually people give up. And that is unless they have the tools to overcome. And I can cite a personal example here. There's a table at work that is full of snacks, you know, various things. And in the morning, I'm great. I walk right by it all day long. But when it gets to like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, four, I give in to those gummy bears, those cute little things. They scream out. They say, "Eric, eat me." And I do. It's that, and I don't do it just to make the point in this message today. It's just a matter of fact that if we continue to have to exert our self-control, eventually it wears down. And as you know, this is the life of a Christian. We live in a world where we face the temptation to sin every single day, and we have to choose what to do. We have to retain our self-control to do what is right, and it can be exhausting if we're at that early stage of overcoming. However, by training our attention, we can keep our self-control and not fall prey to the sin that we so much want to avoid. Just as the children who received two marshmallows set their attention on something else, Christians need to focus their attention on something better. And the best way to become immune to fatigue, that fatigue of resisting sin, is to remove that conflict of interests. If we have no desire to sin, we have no fatigue in trying to overcome that sin. It takes zero effort to do what is right if doing what is right is the first thing we want to do, and not something that, you know, we are trying to resist. So, as Mr. Harris mentioned, the title of my sermonette today is Indefatigable. I pronounce it slightly different. I like the Merriam-Webster definition, which states it quite simply. It means incapable of being fatigued. Incapable of being fatigued. This is the state that we should be shooting for. Please turn over to Romans 12, and I'll read verses 1 and 2 to open up. Romans 12 and verse 1. "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God." The way we live our lives is as a sacrifice. It involves willingly giving something up. What are we giving up? We are giving up those worldly ways, those worldly enticements. We give up our own carnal will and replace that with the will of God in our lives. That's the sacrifice we make. And that should be a willing sacrifice. And the way that we do that requires changing ourselves, rewiring our minds and hearts so that we're motivated to find pleasure and fulfillment in righteousness instead of anything that the world may have to offer us contrary to that. We are not conformed to the world, but we are transformed. Our attention is focused not on the appeal of sin, but on the appeal of righteousness. I'll read Colossians 3 and verse 2 for you, which supports this. "If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth." That is how we train our minds, to think about righteousness, to think about godliness, to find the value of living in those ways and put that into our hearts. That's how we look away from the marshmallow. That's how we find something more appealing in the room. If we set our attention away from the enticements of the world, they eventually lack any power over us, and our self-control becomes much easier to retain. I want to turn over to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and I'll read verses 9 through 12, which explains the corollary, the opposite of that, or at least that's how I'm going to look at this scripture. 2 Thessalonians 2, beginning in verse 9. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. If we don't do our job in training our minds on things above, we simply allow the world to have greater power over us. The love for the truth is what we need to work on building. If we can do that successfully, it takes no self-control to resist sin, because sin is something that we hate very naturally. There's no conflict of interests that require that exertion of self-control. And we can think of, us right now, we're keeping the Sabbath. Some may think that keeping the Sabbath is a burden that they wish they did not need to follow. But in loving the Sabbath, in all that it has to offer, and thinking about, the alternative activities that we might be able to do, it's easy for us to love the Sabbath and to keep it because we want to do that. We're not drawn away by the things that we could do. And there are plenty that the world offers us. It's a sacrifice to turn down opportunities that the world has to offer, but it's a willing sacrifice that does not exhaust our self-control. That's the state that we should be shooting for. The work that it takes to overcome sin becomes easier and easier as sin becomes less and less appealing. Let's turn over to Matthew 11, and I'll read verses 28 through 30. Matthew 11, verse 28. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. When I first read this scripture, I wondered how it could possibly be true that the burden of following Jesus Christ could possibly be light. How is this way of life easy? Well, we've just covered that. This way of life becomes easy when we love this way of life. Certainly, it is contrary to the way of the world, and when we are coming out of the world, it takes a tremendous amount of work as we are learning to love this way of life. However, when we transform our minds and our hearts to love this way of life, the burden truly is light. God's ways are desirable. The strategic move that we must take is clear, especially if we are exhausted by the self-control that it takes to overcome sin. We have to change the way that we find fulfillment and satisfaction. Are we looking to the world for those satisfactory activities, or are we looking to God? We choose a different target for our attention than the world offers. That's why we call it conversion. We are converting the way that we think, the way that we love a way of life, so that it is turned away from the world and converted to loving the way of God. We focus our love to the way of life that God has to offer, the way that He commands it. By fixing our attention on righteousness, we don't have to worry about becoming fatigued because we're exerting self-control to overcome the conflict of interests all the time. By finding fulfillment and joy in the righteous way of the life commanded by God, fatigue and overcoming sin will never overtake us.